From Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News, this is the GenCast Network. Bringing you compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. This week on the GenCast Network, Dr. Mark Frumhold from Coronis Pharmaceuticals is interviewed by Gen's editor-in-chief John Sterling about the development of a novel, non-suppressive drug therapy for HIV infections.
Dr. Mark Frumhold is Vice President of Manufacturing and Business Development at Coronis Pharmaceuticals, which is based in Seattle. The privately held biotechnology company is developing antiviral therapeutics based on a novel mechanism called viral decay acceleration. Coronis's lead product candidate is KP1461 and is intended for the treatment of HIV. KP1461 is an oral prodrug of KP1212, a nucleoside shown to be effective in cell culture against HIV1 and HIV2. Dr. Frumhold, there is an extremely interesting research report published in PLOS1 last month. It discussed Phase 2A clinical trial results involving HIV patients who received your therapeutic, KP1461. What were the main results of this study, and why are the findings significant?
Well, it's a pleasure to be here this morning, John. Let me just start by trying to put this Phase 2 study into perspective, because this was a limited duration Phase 2 study, monotherapy, patients all infected with multi-drug resistant HIV, and was really focused on demonstrating that a totally new mechanism of action for treating HIV had the potential to work in vivo. This type of a therapeutic strategy is very different in that we progressively debilitate the virus versus just simply blocking viral replication. So the rationale behind this short duration study is that we already knew from our laboratory experiments that there was an extended treatment period prior to realizing the effects of the drug. And I should point out that the effects are quite dramatic in that we see complete ablation of viral populations with no signs of resistance or cross resistance. And because we knew that there was an extended treatment period, it was critical that we demonstrate some form of drug activity or mechanistic proof of concept before launching into a long, expensive trial. So since we knew that there was this extended treatment period before we see this drop in viral load, we needed something other than just viral load to evaluate drug activity. Fortunately, the other thing we learned during our in vitro studies in cell culture is that an increase in viral mutation frequency is a biomarker for VD activity and a precursor to ablation of the viral population, or that significant drop in viral load. And this represents a good biomarker for preliminary signs of drug activity. And what we found in this study was quite compelling, because when we sequenced the patient viral isolates following completion of the trial, it revealed a highly statistically significant increase in viral mutation frequency. And not just a completely random increase in mutation frequency either, but exactly the type of mutations that are predicted by this mechanism of action. So these clinical findings confirmed that our investigational therapeutic, KP1461, was not only acting by VDA, but it also further validates this approach as a viable mechanism for development of an entirely new class of therapeutics for treating HIV, and also has the potential for curing HIV. I mean, it's really something that could be completely game-changing.
So we'll talk a little bit about the VDA approach you just referred to a few seconds ago, a little later in the interview. But tell us more about this retroviral drug strategy for increasing viral mutation rates. And how specifically does a drug such as KP1461 go about doing its job?
What's really important in understanding this therapeutic strategy is to take a close look at HIV. Because when you do, something very striking comes to the surface. What you see is that HIV's greatest strength, its mutation frequency and rate of replication, also represent the virus's greatest weakness. So while these strengths enable the virus to overcome the effects of current inhibitory therapeutic strategies, it comes at a considerable cost. You know, this is a considerable evolutionary advantage they have that we're trying to fight against. Because if you take blood from an HIV-infected person and look at the virus, what you find is that approximately 99.99% of the viral particles are not capable of replicating and are therefore non-infectious. They've essentially mutated beyond their survivability threshold. So HIV is already sacrificing the vast majority of its progeny just to survive. So in essence, you can suggest that HIV lives on the edge of a cliff in terms of its viability. So rather than try and fight against the virus's greatest strength, we turn that around trying to use the virus's strength against itself. So while the conventional nucleoside-type analogs like an AZT, for example, get incorporated into the viral genome just like ours, the outcome of that incorporation is very different. So the conventional therapeutics, these inhibitory therapies like AZT, which block viral replication, they've been very successful in providing near-term benefits in reducing viral load. However, the selective pressure, by its very nature, selects for survival of drug-resistant viral variants, and these variants are typically less fit and therefore comprise only a very small part of the viral population. However, in the presence of constant selective pressure from these inhibitory therapeutics, these viral variants are given space to evolve and progressively increase their fitness to the point at which drug resistance becomes a problem. So while these inhibitory therapeutics select for resistant viral variants, our therapeutic strategy is very different in that we provide a much more even pressure on all viral variants. Essentially, by increasing the mutation frequency of the virus, we progressively debilitate the entire viral population to the point at which it's pushed over survivability threshold, at which we see the viral population collapse. And it's really interesting, when we see the viral population collapse in our in vitro studies, it literally looks like HIV is falling off the edge of a cliff.
What are the potential side effects of KP1461 as compared to other HIV therapeutics?
Well, from the hypothetical standpoint, potentially the side effects associated with 1461 could be considered similar to current nucleoside reverse transcriptase inhibitors. However, what we observe in our preclinical and clinical studies is something completely different, because while the traditional kind of nucleoside reverse transcriptase inhibitors tend to have significant toxic side effects, including significant genotoxicity, KP1461 continues to be safe and well-tolerated with no signs of genotoxic potential in our human clinical studies and in our preclinical studies.
Your company is developing antiviral therapies based on a mechanism that you called VDA before, viral decay acceleration. Would you describe VDA in more detail?
Sure. So viral decay acceleration is essentially a process by which we mutate HIV to death. We essentially, as we already discussed, HIV helps us out with this by taking care of 99.99% of the virus as part of its everyday life. So we don't have to push very hard to get it over the cliff. What's really interesting, too, in this approach, in terms of accelerating the mutation frequency to ablate the viral population, is new data coming out suggesting that our own cellular defense mechanisms use VDA to combat HIV. More specifically, there's the APOBEC system that's been getting a lot more press recently that tries to cause additional mutations in the viral genome. And when you consider that 6 to 8% of the human genome is littered with shards of retroviral fragments, you can start to consider the possibility that maybe purging all the virus from our bodies will be a pretty formidable challenge. Maybe what we're trying to do is render the infection dormant. And through the progressive debilitation of HIV by a VDA-type mechanism, one can see the potential to impact the viability of circulating virus and also progressively populate the viral reservoirs, which are a major problem with crippled viral variants, potentially rendering the infection dormant.
In addition to HIV, what other types of diseases are being targeted by Coronis Pharmaceuticals for new drug development?
While this technology certainly has the application with all chronic viral infections, probably the most interesting opportunity in my mind is with HCV. HCV is a plus-strand RNA virus which could allow for multiple incorporations of mutations during a single replication cycle, so there's a potential that it could work even better in HCV than it works in HIV. And what's really interesting in that particular instance as well is when you consider the current therapeutic strategy for HCV, which is interferon and ribavirin. Now, ribavirin doesn't have any real appreciable activity against HCV, but in combination with interferon, it increases the success rate from 33% up to about 55%. Now, the interesting thing is, in that absence of real significant activity against HCV, well, what kind of activity could it have? Well, ribavirin is known to act by at least 5 mechanisms of action, and one of those mechanisms of action is VDA. And interestingly, the one type of assay that would not pick up a viral decay acceleration mechanism is the single passage screen that's typically done to show activity against a virus. So there's already, I think, some precedent out there showing that, you know, viral decay acceleration has power and strength in terms of combating other viral infections out there.
Now, based on the findings of the PIL-OS1 report, what else needs to happen clinically to demonstrate that VDA can become the first non-suppressive drug approach against HIV?
Well, from my perspective, the path forward is relatively straightforward. Now that we've demonstrated that the VDA mechanism of action is operating in vivo with 1461, and we have a really good safety profile. We continue to see no signs of resistance and cross resistance. We really need to conduct a longer duration study to demonstrate a meaningful clinical response in the form of a drop in viral load. Additionally, it's important to remember, as I mentioned before, that phase two study was all monotherapy of patients infected with multi-drug-resistant HIV, and that monotherapy is really important because then there's really a very clear signal that the drug activity we're seeing was only from the drug as opposed to from some other side effect. Furthermore, I've mentioned that the drug, the VDA mechanism of action, progressively debilitates the virus. And what's really interesting about this mechanism of action is that as the virus is progressively debilitated, it becomes more sensitive to our therapeutic instead of becoming less sensitive, which is what you see with the current inhibitory therapeutic strategies. And even more remarkable is that as the virus becomes more debilitated and more sensitive to our therapeutic, we've seen preliminary signs that it's becoming progressively more sensitive to inhibitory therapeutics as well, which opens the door for other treatment paradigms looking at combination therapy and monotherapy moving forward. So when you think about this in terms of current treatment trends, if we can maintain this current activity profile and this lack of resistance continues to move forward, we can begin to see the potential for establishment of a unified therapeutic strategy for HIV, which could not only significantly alter the current treatment paradigms, but also enable greater access to HIV therapeutics worldwide. I mean, and that's really of critical importance considering the need to get ahead of this pandemic and the fact that only about 10% of those infected are currently receiving treatment.
I'm John Sterling. Thanks for listening. If you would like to comment on this week's podcast, please go to our podcast section at www.genengnews.com and give us your thoughts. We'd really like to hear from you. Bye for now.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast, or to listen to previous GenCasts, visit our website at www.genengnews.com. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghouse, saying thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week to the GenCast Network.